You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
The meter of how high you are is how quickly you admit to people what drug you're on.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comedian and comic book creator Zio New. And now your host. He saw the Hawk Tui Girl video and didn't understand what all the fuss was about. He learned that back in Catholic school. Deez Casillas.
Mullum Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deez. Welcome back. Thanks for hanging out for another episode. Guys, we got a good one for you here. Before we get into it with our guests, though, please, as usual, go to deezcomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network, live shows happening around the country from The Social Hour, as well as live events for me. I will be at Artisan Craft Distillery this Saturday, guys. I'm going to be there for the next couple weeks working on some material before I hit the road for the late summer tour starting in August. So if you're in San Antonio, that's about the only place you're going to catch me for the next couple weeks. And then I will be all over the Northwest and a bunch of other places. Check the dates and check it out, guys. But that's it for announcements. Nothing major going on. Just the huge. We are going to get in it with our guest today, coming to us all the way from California. She is a comedian, a comic book writer, creator, and more. Please welcome Zio New. How you doing, Zio?
Yay. I'm good. Doing well. Doing quite well.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for being here. Yeah, the... We first interacted as you did a couple shows for me down in Anaheim, but more recently you're doing a comic book, which I do want to talk about because I love that.
Yeah.
As I expressed through in my message. I always like to talk about get to the root of my guests a little bit first. Where are you from? California? Where are you from originally?
I'm from China.
You are from China. Okay. I didn't know if you were actually from there or not. So when did you come to America?
Okay, I came here about 8 years ago when I was 23.
Okay.
So a little bit over 8 years.
Yeah.
I was 23. Now I'm like almost 32. Okay. I'm 32. I don't know why I lied. I'm 32.
Like the difference between 31 and 32 is going to be the difference.
I'm for realsies. Yeah. 32. Yeah. So it's been a ride. I first lived in San Francisco for about 3 years.
Okay.
Then in 2017, I moved down here in L.A., Los Angeles, a hellhole, which I like it, you know.
It has its ups and downs, that's for sure.
Yeah, mostly downs and pee and you know, and getting attacked by homeless people.
Yeah, you know, it's
but,
not.
Mostly it's fun.
Sure,
it's fun.
It adds just a little spite. You got to stay on your feet. You know, head on a swivel. You got to be prepared for that. You know, zombie apocalypse that's coming.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I have this, like, you know, like, I play video games sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I always have this feeling about, I feel like sometimes you see a unhoused person. I want to be PC here.
Sure.
When you see an unhoused fella, you don't know if he's NPC. Most of the time he's NPC and he's fine. He's doing whatever, you know, he's chilling, and then you walk past, nothing's going to happen. But sometimes it's an enemy.
Right.
And they should make it clear. They should put a bar over their head to show you. So you, when you get close within the vicinity, like the bar should turn from green to red.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay.
It should just
so
be like,
I don't have to.
It's just like a fentanyl bar. Like how much fentanyl they have left in their system until they're depleted.
Weeding through the bar like throughout the day, you know?
Yeah.
And like I said, most of them are NPCs.
Right.
You know, they're doing whatever. They're shooting up fun stuff.
Doing their
thing. Have a fun time, you know.
Yeah,
they're in their own world. That's great. And I just need to know the difference. I need the Yes, because the labeling.
The surprise is not good when you get surprised.
I don't like the surprises. I went back to San Francisco a few months ago.
Yeah.
And San Francisco really changed.
Oh, yeah.
Because I used to live there. And, you know, it was bad before, and the pandemic totally made it 10 times worse.
Right, yeah.
And I remember I was taking the BART subway system, and literally I was really scared in the middle of the night. And it's kind of like the whole downtown area kind of just became like a Resident Evil experience.
Yeah.
You know, like, if it's okay if you can see them, if you see the NPCs, and you know, in the wide and open, you know, okay, I'm going to plan my route.
Right.
I'm gonna here and then whatever.
Take a wide
right?
berth around you. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna plan it. But the thing is, like, they're hidden in those corners, like Resident Evil. You open that little door, you don't know, someone just jump like out of nowhere.
Yeah, they're popping out from the ceiling. They're like fucking SEAL Team 6.
Exactly. It's that basically is the basis of all good horror movies.
Yeah.
Is when you don't know where they at.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not afraid of gore. I'm not afraid of, like, you know, Chainsaw Man if I can see it.
Yeah.
Because I can run.
It's the jump scare that gets you.
Yeah, but it's the what's behind that little door.
That is the problem, you know? With, like, the this whole thing. Because, like, where I lived in Washington State, we had a pretty big homeless epidemic, or unhoused, whatever the term is, which I don't understand either. If we're talking about English prefix and suffixes, unhoused and homeless is the same word. We just switched the suffix and prefix. I just like the idea of anyone who's like, no, it's not. When people get like, it's not homeless, it's unhoused.
Yeah.
I'm like, perfect.
So what's wrong with you?
Like, they still don't have a house. I don't think they care. But I worked with a lot of homeless outreach programs. We did a lot of stuff working with these programs, and it was tough, and like it's such a complicated problem with a lot of, like, it's tough to deal with. But what I've really seen in some places, especially like San Francisco and like Portland, Seattle, some of the bigger West Coast cities that I go to a lot, is that like the city has allowed it to get to the point where they let them do whatever they want at the expense of the people who live there, you know? And that's
exactly,
that's kind of where we have to be. Like I'm all for humanity, I'm all for wanting to help these people, but like letting them shoot up in public and then go attack people with a machete is like, that's not good for anyone, you know? Like that's where we have to be like, okay, what are we actually doing about that's not compassion, right?
Yeah, that's such a big issue. I think, like, I do have some compassion for it. Like, this pandemic has been rough for everybody. I literally have, like, I wouldn't say friend, like, I literally have, like, acquaintances of mine who's, like, on the verge of, like, breaking, but hasn't broken yet, and then totally just broke, like, like, just, I'm serious, like, mentally just like, went run amok.
Yeah.
You know, just all the things that's, like, brewing, like, this really all, let it all came out, and then a lot of people are in a very bad place, you know, financially and mentally. And,
oh, yeah.
It's really rough. Yeah.
Yeah. And, it was, I mean, you know, it was unprecedented. It's something that no one ever expected or lived through before.
No.
Like, there's no way to mentally prepare for, like, your life is going to be fucked for 4 years and then it'll continue, like, perpetually be different forever after that, you know?
Yeah. And I'd apologize for concocting the virus in my home country's lab.
Well, I'm glad someone finally came out.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
I took responsibilities.
Yeah, let's see.
Okay,
let's see. When did you say you came to LA, Zio? Okay, let's see if these timelines start to match up a little bit.
Well, if you'll check my travel log, you will see a significant resemblance. Yeah.
How do you feel about
the other chart? Yeah, well, I did my part to thin the herd.
Thin the herd. No. That's right. Well, you know, there's some we can do something.
Yeah.
And there's a little, like, you know, a little soft eugenics never hurt anyone.
Yeah, I know. Like, do all people matter?
Right. Yeah, come on. There's a couple. I think we can all say that there's a few people we can be like, eh.
There's a few people that we will not be missing too much.
Yeah, yeah? It'll be all right. Then and out.
It'll be like, yeah.
Hey, you live in LA, you just get places faster on the freeway, you know? All of a sudden, the 405 is not so clogged up.
Don't move to LA. You will become me.
Yeah.
This will be your point of view of the world. Like, don't they all deserve to live? Like,
right? The whole living thing. So what?
Anyways.
So what? How you were? Let's see. You were 23 when you moved from China to America, you said?
Exactly. I was 23, so I was basically born and raised and educated in China.
What?
And
no part. Yeah. What was the like impetus to catalyst to move to America, or is that like always the plan,
right?
Or is there like was?
No, I got into this like. Sounds very cringe when I said it. I got into this entrepreneurship program in Silicon Valley. You know, it was founded by this guy. His
very
name is
Asian
Tim Draper.
Of you. Okay.
No. This is a guy who now I learned.
Yeah.
I had no idea when I got into the program. Now I learned he's a he worships Trump. So remember, Trump has a university called Trump University.
I do recall.
For like.
Yeah.
Like for like, I don't know what it's for like business owners or whatever. It's a scam, by the way.
I would imagine it's probably it's not around
anymore.
There's
just like there's a laundry list of lawsuits. Anyways, though, this guy, he is a billionaire. He was like invested in all the like Silicon Valley companies, including Tesla.
Yeah.
You know, which is founded by another beloved public figure. He set up this entrepreneurship program called Draper University, which is exactly like the copycat of Trump University. But I actually had some fun in the program.
Okay.
You know, met a lot of people, learned a lot of things. I met my ex-husband there.
Okay.
And then I got married, and the marriage collapsed. The marriage collapsed pretty fast.
Okay.
He's Catholic and a redhead and crazy and you know, all that. Nobody told me redheads are subhuman.
You could have just said Catholic. I could have done the crazy math. I get it.
Yeah, I know. It's you know, generations of inbreeding that caused quite an issue. So, yeah. I think he's stalking his girlfriend after me for like 6 months.
Yeah.
So I think he went more crazy. I think I might have broken him.
Was it a little bit of like the forbidden fruit thing? Because that's like about as far away from, because like in America we're more of a melting pot. In China it's like a lot of everyone's Chinese basically. They don't have as much diversity. So you know, is it like a Catholic white redheaded guy is almost as far away from what you would have?
Yeah, here's the thing. I had pretty low self-esteem at the time.
Uh-huh.
That's mostly it. And maybe for him, it's kind of like you don't want to use the word exotic, but I'm going to use it here. Let's just be honest here.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. And at the time, to be honest, I don't really understand the concept of Catholicism. I know
I
there's
think
Christians.
Does or ever has.
But for, yeah, but for me, it's just like a big, like my grandmother is a Buddhist.
Yeah.
So she has this little shrine. She would pray for us. She would like eat vegan food for like certain days of the month, not all days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So very mild, very like none of your business and none of my business kind of attitude.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, all religions is just kind of like that, right? So, so you know, you have Christians, you have your little shrine, which is a bigger one. It's called the church.
Bigger
the
better.
And I didn't know they're crazy. And then the Catholics are the craziest of them all, except for the cults and Scientology and stuff
The
OG Christians.
Yeah.
I think the Catholics are
they take
truly
the cake.
Insane.
Yeah, as someone who was born and raised a Catholic, I can tell you it's a.
Oh, you were. I'm so sorry.
Oh.
I was shitting on it.
No. Believe me. I have 20 minutes in my in my set where I just shit on Catholicism because it's a crazy thing. In growing up Catholic, believe me, I can verify it's completely wild. You know, I mean, they're the only religion also that's like not the only one, but they're so like they've got so much hubris. Where they'll look at any other religion, you know, like
they're
Mormons.
Haunted,
yeah, they're like, oh, look at, you know, like, look at their, they're wearing their magic underwear, thinking they get a planet when they die. And then Lent comes around and they're like, well, I gotta put some ash on my forehead and not eat Abba Zabba's for a week so I can go to heaven. And you're like, the shit are you talking about, man? This is an insane habit you have.
Yeah, it was pretty insane. The marriage collapsed pretty fast. I almost had to move out of the country because I didn't fulfill the requirement to get a green card because I filed for divorce 1 year, 9 months in, and you need to be in it for 2 years. So there's I have to hire a lawyer and all that shit, you know. But at that time, I was only 25.
Yeah.
So I was ready to just go back to China because, you know, sure. I think it's still pretty young to go, like, fine, this is just going to be a little stint, you know?
Nobody in China knows about this. I'll still be never married.
Yeah, whatever. But, yeah, I just pretend I'm a virgin so I can get married again. I'm just kidding. So after that happened, it's interesting because he dated this girl who's also Asian. Now I think he might have yellow fever, which is fine for me. Yeah, but it's funny when you track your exes and see like that their next spouse is also like Asian. You're like, huh.
That's a compliment to you, right?
Yeah, so he dated this girl who is also Christian. So on the paper, it's like, okay, great, you find your own kind now. You know, the differences that we had, you're not going to have. But still, it did also collapse. And then she's getting stalked and she's contacting me. It's a whole thing. It's a whole like Jerry Springer / Maury kind of like storyline, which, you know, in one day I will talk about, you know. Yeah.
So what was like, give me some deets on the, what was it in the religion that got you first? Where you're like, this is crazy. Like, give me some examples of what hit you.
The first time I met his parents.
Yeah.
His parents are not very thrilled about seeing me being Asian and, you know, whatever. Tannies. You know what I'm talking about? You're from the South. You get it.
Yeah.
Have you seen, like, okay, have you seen 90 Day Fiancé? Have you seen that show?
I'm aware of it. I've never seen it.
Okay. So I always love when, like, some white girl from the South or a Christian family, a blonde girl just brought someone from a third world country, and then the first dinner they have with their parents, and their parents was had to keep it like cordial and everything, but clearly they're not happy.
Right.
When she's like, he preferred to be called Andreas, you know, when they try to like, okay, whatever. Yeah, so that's what I get, but it's kind of more hardcore than that. I remember his dad, the first time I met him. And it's the first hour that I met him. Got off the plane, you know, all the way from like China to Orlando, and then from Orlando to Tampa. He's like, my grandson will be Catholic. That's the first thing he said to me. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I was like, okay. Yeah. And then he took me to church, my ex-husband. I've never been to church.
Yeah.
So I was pretty open mind. I was pretty neutral. Like, I don't have great expectations nor negative expectations. And then they sing the song, and then everyone stood up like they're masturbating together, you know?
Yeah.
And the song lyrics are fucking insane. Like, may my body be the vessel of the light of the Lord or some shit like that.
You're very
sexual. Yeah, in my opinion.
Well, have you seen Jesus's body? That he's a sex symbol. You know, I'd want him to. I'd be his vessel any day.
I know Jesus Christ is the sexual deviant of our time.
He didn't get killed by the Romans. The crucifixion was just a BDSM thing gone too far.
I know, it's chilling with a hooker, Maria. You know what I mean?
Mary. Come on, have some
Mary.
Respect.
Whatever. Who knows? Mary, Maria. Probably have a binders.
Probably a couple. Picks. Yeah.
High chicks on the side. We've only seen the one that's been written in the books.
Sure.
Anyways, I was in church. I could not really. I walked out of the church in the middle of their thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Was it service?
Yeah.
What it's called?
Sure. Yeah,
when everyone stood up, hands above, you know, their head, I had this very blissful, I just smoked pot kind of face, and just doing this, like I just can't, because it reminds me of what I experienced as a kid when we will look at the flag, the Chinese Communist flag, and listen to the national anthem, and then being brainwashed by the communism stuff.
A lot of conditioning.
And then a lot of conditioning, and this like student representative would go in front of everybody and read this kind of like his ass piece about how Communist Party is the best party in the world, and we should all be thankful. The Kim Jong-un shit, the North Korea shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't see a difference. I don't see a fundamental differences between the two. And I said, this is not for me. So I just walked out in the middle of it. And there's a lot of friction that I cannot really blame it 100% on religion. I think the family is a bit nuts, but religion doesn't help.
Yeah. It's kind of a chicken or the egg situation as far as was when they got nuts. So, yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah, it's a good, really, when you say like growing up around communism and that type of thing is in that, like having to worship the flag and the state, essentially, in China. It's conditioning, and it's very cultish, and they want you to adhere, and it's strict, and they start early and often. So
the first song I ever learned is I Love Chairman Mao. Like, that's literally, I like Beijing Tiananmen Square, and Chairman Mao is our leader. He's
I mean, what was that like? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, growing up, it was maybe, God, I don't know, I hate to say less extreme than it was in the past in China. I guess extreme depending on which way you
when
look
I was,
at it.
When I was growing up, all the brainwash still happens, but, like, the craziest part about, like, cultural evolution, that happens from 66 to 76.
Yeah.
So that's when I would say that's even a little bit before my parents' generation. My mom was born in 1970. So when Cultural Revolution ended, she was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was born in 92, that was already 3 years after they opened up the country to the West.
Yeah.
So that's when they started to have factories and sweatshops and whatever. But in the meantime, people are starting to get more money.
Yeah.
And it's not really like North Korea. There's a huge difference between China and North Korea.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
But in the meantime, it's this very weird hybrid system when they still preach the communism kind of ideology, but in the meantime we're doing everything that capitalist countries do, like America, UK, or anything. We're making our money, you know, we have our tech companies and whatever. You see TikTok and everything, but in the meantime you still have to worship this thing. It's very bizarre, but I've learned since then that this kind of bizarre system existed in a lot of countries. Like, for example, Singapore, it's still under a dictatorship.
Yeah.
But it's a very rich country. It's one of the, you know, it's one of the richest countries in the world. People have good housing, good education. Like, nobody has housing issues, highly educated, but it's a dictatorship.
Yeah.
It's still passing on through other families. So it's kind of weird and bizarre. So when I was growing up, every course, you know, every curriculum has to have, it's ingrained with the brainwashing and propaganda. Literally, there's a college major, it's called Marxism, propaganda and communication.
Yeah.
There's a major. I was almost assigned to do that major because, newsflash, in China, when you took the Chinese SAT, if your score is high enough, you got to choose your own major. But if your score is like not as high, there's a whole system, they will assign you.
They just gotta to tell study you what something. You
get to do. So you're a history major. Yeah. I was a history major. I did not choose it. I don't actually hate history, but like they say, yeah, you're gonna major in history, and then the other choice is, or are you gonna major in Marxism, propaganda, and you know, and communication. So if you major from in that, afterwards you would just be going to be assigned to like different unit of the social fabric. When I say unit, it could be as big as a city, or a province, or as small as a village or a school.
Yeah.
So a school will have its principal, which is just like any Western principals, and have a party leader who's solely in charge of ideology of that school. Yeah, and every compound, every street, every community, you know, will have one of those. It's kind of like our rabbi, you know, except they preached communism, you know. It's very similar. Like, when you think about it, it is sort of like, it is not a religion, but it functions as one. It scams people as one, you know.
Yeah, I mean, anything like that, whether it's, you know, government control or religion, it always just comes down to control, period. Whether it's coming from your state, whether it's coming from your religious figures. I mean, that's why when you look back on, like, Christianity, there was a long period of time where only the priests could actually, they were the only ones that were educated enough to read the languages that the scriptures and the Bible was written in. So, like, do you think they were saying exactly what the Bible said, or were they like, yeah, maybe also you give 20% to me? You know what I'm saying? That's what that says it right here.
Suck my dick, or you'll never go to heaven. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I think maybe it says that.
Yeah,
suck your dick. Nah, it says my name.
Yeah, specifically me. I mean, they're gonna spice it up a little, right? You know, not that whatever the original texts were a genuine article of history. I mean, they were a historical item. But the reality, yeah, who fucking knows? Probably not, I'm guessing.
I don't want the topic to be too heavy, so
we
can talk about something else if you want. But I don't care. You know, I can keep talking about it. You know,
well, I mean, I'm just so I didn't even think about this aspect before we got on, and it just fascinates me so much because I do, you know, you do see with America and China this kind of like, whatever, like global rivalry, you know, and almost to the point where, like, I'm not sure if you heard this last week, Saudi Arabia just took the oil up. It was based off the U.S. dollar forever, and they just took it off the U.S. dollar and opening it up to Chinese yen and other forms of currency, which is really going to make a huge difference in the way globally, the way China competes and the way our dollar is valued in globally. You know,
yeah, it is an emerging, you know, economical force. I wouldn't say culturally it has the same kind of influence. On that front, China has a very long way to go. If you even think about Asian culture export, it's Japan and Korea. Maybe Korea more so in recent years. Japan has been that, you know, force forever. Their manga, their video games and whatsoever. So if you talk about soft power, I don't really see in the next 20 years like the Chinese cultural product is gonna, because I feel like that's gonna be one of the major things. But you were talking about like Saudi Arabia was using RMB, you know, as their currency instead of USD. And there's a lot, I mean, I'm not very adept at like geopolitical you know.
You're a correspondent like for everything China now.
Yeah. I was a journalist in China. I was a journalist working for like international news agencies like CNBC, The Guardian.
Oh, wow.
So for a while, that is kind of like my job. I don't write like op-ed or whatever, but you know, I do have experience covering certain issues.
Well, what is it? I mean, you know, we hear everything like how much, you know, whether it's like the thing with the Uyghur Muslims and, you know, how much control the government has over basically every corporation and these people, you know, just kind of disappearing and stuff like that. Like, how much of that do you really is
true?
Yeah. Or given to you as like a citizen, that do you get to see those aspects or hear those aspects? Because they also limit media. It's all state run media.
True. I mean, I would say people disappearing, that's definitely true. Like, they have a lot of people just disappear without like a trial or anything. I would say it's better than North Korea. We have lawyers and whatever. North Korea, you can just disappear and never be heard again. I personally have acquaintances who's also kind of like me. They're Chinese employees working for foreign media or Western media. And because they reported on some sensitive issues, they basically just disappeared. I remember I was shopping with this girl on Sunday, and then on Tuesday, like, her parents are calling me, say, hey, you're like one of the last people who seen her, like, we can't get a hold of her, and then I have no idea where she's going, you know. And then a week later, we read it on the news that she was thrown in jail for it's called like intent to subvert the government. That happened to like two people that I know. Like, not really friends, but acquaintances, but like, we have socials, you know, gatherings and stuff like that. So that's just my personal experience that happened around me. So if you just deduce from that, people disappearing is definitely true, because it has happened just around me. The Uyghur camps, yes, they were kept in labor camps. I'm not going to defend them and say, oh, is that not as bad as the Jews back in the days? I don't think they're putting them into an oven or whatever. But what happened is it's actually a very complicated issue. The Uyghurs are one of the 55 minority groups in China. Mm-hmm. So China officially, I think they're, in reality, there are more, but officially there are 56 different ethnicities.
Mm,
and most Chinese people, more than 95% are Han people. People look like me.
Yeah.
Or most Chinese people you see, those are Han. Those are the white people in China, basically. the WASPs, you know, the WASPy ones. And then there are 55 other minority groups, and Uyghurs are one of them. They have their own language. They have their own religion, which is not always Islam. They used to believe in Buddhism.
Okay.
And they were converted into Muslims about like a few hundred years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they have their own language, they have their own religion, they have their own culture. Culturally, they don't really identify themselves as Chinese at all.
Yeah.
Because we don't, I think that area was conquered in Qing Dynasty. Qing, which is like in, I want to say 17th century. Mm-hmm. China has more than officially more than 5,000 years of history, in reality, about like 2,000 years, that's trackable,
right?
Non-trackable 5,000. So if you take a look at that, like my hometown has been part of China since 5,000 years ago. So culturally, it's very easy for me to identify as Chinese because I am.
Yeah.
But basically, they were conquered by the rulers at the time. So they never kind of identify themselves as part of China. Like, we don't speak the same language, we don't worship the same idol, and blah blah blah. They always want to be their own. It's not a communist party problem. It has been a problem throughout history, throughout different kind of regimes and stuff like that. And I think about 20 years ago, things kind of got worse. Like, they totally got radicalized. That's the Chinese government's saying. I've never been to the region, so I can't tell.
Okay.
But they have been terrorist attacks, mm-hmm. kind of like those attacks you've seen in Europe. You know, people who just go to a train station and stab like people like for no reason, zero reason. Or it's like kind of like racially based. If you look like me, you get stabbed. If you look like them, because they also don't look like us. They look like Middle Easterns.
Mm,
like ethnically, it's like they look like Afghanis, you know.
Wow.
Because they have a lot of like, we share borders with Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not so far from Afghanistan, Kazakhstan, Turkey, all these countries. So they're historically, there's a lot of like, I want to say, bloodline from those regions. So obviously, I understand why they will identify themselves more with them. It looked like that.
Yeah. Well,
sorry.
Their lifestyle is probably more in line with, but they're just because of the way borders were drawn, they're in the wrong area. They're in the, you know, they're in the area they've been in for years, but that area is now part of a different country, and we've kind of, you know, so.
Yeah. So in the first, like, I would say 40 years or so, it kind of just kind of like a Puerto Rico of China, you know, like, oh, you can do your own thing, but we were governing you, whatever.
Yeah.
But ever since the terrorist attack, like, the government really realized it's a huge issue, and what they want to do, and their way of radicalizing is to kind of try to wipe out the Islam influence over that region. I'm not going to comment whether it's right or wrong. I myself have very strong opinion against all religions.
Yeah.
But the approach they have adopted are pretty militant, and is very debatable and questionable and inhumane. Basically, they, for example, they will force men in that region to cut off their long beard, because, you know, that's kind of like part of their culture too. They were like, you gotta shave it if you want to get a job.
Yeah,
you want to get a job, you know. And then they will put in people in labor camps. So the whole thing about boycotting Nike, because they were using, that region also has a lot of cotton, you know. Like, people think of slavery a little bit.
Yeah.
You know.
There's some, you know, synonymous.
Yes. So you've seen these people who are believing a different religion, and just because of that, they were put in, or they have different opinions. They were put in labor camps, and they work for free, and then, you know, they manufacture shoes or clothing or whatever. Yeah. And then they have their relatives disappearing around them.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not like everybody, just because they're Uyghurs, got put in camps. It'd be like, okay, where's cousin cousin Jake.
Yeah.
Cousin Jake is no longer with us.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And you see a mugshot next week. Oh, okay, he's in the labor camp.
He's part of that exhibit where they show the bodies at the different museums.
He got a new job with zero pay now for the rest of his life. Well, that's basically what happens.
It's so funny because it's part of the reason I always get so, like, I hate anything disingenuous, right? Like, it's especially now with social media, it's so hollow. Like, all the virtue signaling and shit. Like, and I hate, like, Nike during February, during Black Lives Matter protests, they're like, oh, black square on our Instagram.
Black fist changing their, like, profile to a black fist.
Yeah, like, motherfucker, you use slave labor. Shut the fuck up. Like, I mean, I'm not saying don't be for, supporting Black Lives Matter. What I'm saying is you can't say that, but also pay slave wages for your shoes to be made. Like,
especially when you think about it. It's cotton. He's like, oh, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah. It just adds to it.
Something about cotton. It's just not. Right. I think it doesn't bode well.
Inexorably tied to slavery. Well, that's so interesting.
There's that. But there are also like rumors that I personally don't think is true. I don't see proof. I think it's basically there's a cult called Falun Gong. They actually control 95% of Chinese media in America. So Epoch Times, they have radio stations. It's kind of like Scientology. It was run by this huge cult called Falun Gong. It's a Buddhism based cult. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of Western cults are based on like Christianity.
Yeah, yeah.
This one's based on Buddhism, right?
Makes sense.
And they're batshit crazy, and they claim Chinese government will put their members in jail and harvest their organs. Like, that's not true.
Yeah. Well, there was that was...
What is true is they do harvest organ from people on death rows.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
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 But it's not because they're cult members. It's just like, might as well use it.
Yeah, we're going to use them. We should use them for something. You know, that pancreas can't go to waste.
I know.
So, that's so interesting. Well, I would... I could talk about this all day, I'm sure, but I do want to get to the... Before we run out of time, I want to get to the comic book that you did.
Awesome.
You just recently put out a Kickstarter for a comic book. You hit your initial goal. You're on, I think you're on some push goal or stretch goals right now, if I'm correct.
Right.
So tell us the name of the book and tell us how it's... Now, are you writing and drawing it?
No, I'm the writer and creator, the artist is someone else.
And tell us how you came up with it, give us a little bit about it.
Cool, the comic book or graphic novel, you can call it, is called Monkey, and trippy post-apocalyptic action comedy. So basically, it's very loosely based or inspired by the Chinese classic Journey to the West, which is a 16th century classic, but in my graphic novel or in this kind of story building, I basically switch the background from the original ancient China to like America during the Cold War era.
Okay.
And basically the monkey was hatched from a dinosaur egg in the 50s and then started this whole cat and mouse chase with the American government. And he accidentally, caused World War III. And the whole story or series will be jumping back and forth from two different timelines of the new world and the old world.
Yeah.
And kind of piece together the whole story of Monkey, which is based on Monkey King. It's a classic character that has thousands of years of history. So yeah, that's basically the book. I came up with the idea actually inspired by Gorillaz. Do you know the band Gorillaz?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Gorillaz actually in 2007, they did a little project that only not a lot of people know. They became the music consultant and art consultant for this London-based play called Journey to the West.
Okay.
So what happens is they wrote a bunch of music for Journey to the West. It's a British band. It's totally like a hybrid kind of music, which is very interesting. I really like that album.
Yeah.
And the artist from Gorillaz, Jamie Hewlett, did a bunch of character concept designs for Journey to the West characters. But unlike a lot of different renditions, he totally just got rid of all the classic elements. Everything looks like a Gorilla's character. And the costume is different, and it just looked very cool. It looks like a punk rock hero to me. And that kind of just gave me the whole idea of, like, I really want to see this as a story instead of just a bunch of pinups and concept art. So I'm like, why don't I create something like this? And that's kind of like, you know, it's how the whole story and idea burgeoned. And yeah, it's been a pretty fun ride. It's been 2 years on and off. I think I was stalling the selling part forever because I literally had no idea how to sell something.
Yeah.
It's always the hardest part. The work it has been done in a relatively short period of time, like 7 months, and we put together like a 62. Actually, we already finished issue 2, so within like 6-7 months, we've done like 120 pages of like content, from story to line work to, you know, color and everything.
Yeah.
And now we're just trying to see if we can build a fan base and keep the series going.
Yeah. It's a long process putting everything together. What was, like, why did you choose the comic book medium? Are you, like, a comic book fan, or what mm-hmm. made you think that was the medium you wanted to use to tell this story?
Well, I always like visual arts. I do not have an art background, nor can I draw, but like I said, when I see Jamie Hewlett's concept design, I can visualize these things.
Yeah.
And I think it would be really cool, you know, to have it become like a graphic novel, because I have this idea in my head, if this becomes a series, these are basically the storyboards.
I
see a big resemblance from comic book panels, good ones, and like storyboards for animation series.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the idea. And the other reason, which I think was more of a big reason a few years ago than now, is a few years ago, like, my English is still not perfect. Speaking okay, but when it comes to creative writing, I think to choose a medium that's more visual can kind of just, you know, hide a little bit of my shortcomings.
Sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But I was like, yeah, if I can just like flash out the dialogue and captions, you know, and nobody will, I don't think anyone pointed out like, oh, this looks foreign, you know?
Yeah.
I think the style and everything is very professionally done, and, you know, you can pick it up and you think it's done by like a whole American team. But instead, there's like only one American member from the whole team, which is the letter. The artist is from Spain, and the colorist is from Greece.
Wow.
I'm from China.
So whole diverse team. That's
very diverse.
So is there, what you said, you know, with your English being perfect with the writing, are you going to do a version in like Chinese?
Not really.
No,
I totally wrote America. Like, it's kind of like American story.
Okay.
Yeah, I have another graphic novel that is a story that's set in China in the 40s. That one would definitely have two different versions, because that one was initially a short story or novella that I wrote in Chinese.
Okay.
And I translated it to English, and then I adapt that English transcript into a comic book script.
Yeah.
So, and that's part of like a horror anthology that I've written. Like, my plan was 8 story. I think I've done 7 out of the 8. So it's, the volume is kind of like a book all written in Chinese, but I'm slowly translating them into like English and trying to see if I can turn that into like graphic novels.
So I guess, again, with the, you know, to decide to use the comic book medium, you said you could just visualize it, so is it not something you were like a comic book reader or fan, you just decided
that's... I am a big manga fan.
Okay.
I do read a lot of graphic novels with very strong storylines. Like, I like Lock and Key, mm-hmm. you know. I like a lot of Neil Gaiman stuff, like Sandman, mm-hmm. like that. I did not grow up with like all the traditional superhero, like Marvel, DC stuff. You know, I think I read like more indie or stuff that's based in like on literature more. But I'm definitely a huge manga fan. I think I'm more influenced by manga more than anything.
Sure.
And like, I'm a huge fan of Junji Ito, you know, the horror manga artists. I'm a huge fan of like Dorohedoro, all the seinen, like more adult facing manga. Yeah. Not porn, but like...
Sure.
the opposite of Naruto. That's what I meant. Yeah. I like hentai too, but that's another topic for another day. Yeah. You know.
You'll save that we'll save that for the Patreon.
Yeah. Put some tentacles.
So I mean, you, because I mean, having gone through this process, I know how time consuming it can be. So, like, mm-hmm. I mean, doing that, doing comedy, doing, you know, I assume you probably do other things also. You know, how do you parse out the time? You know, I mean, how do you look at this on your timeline and your calendar and start looking at deadlines and when things are going to happen?
Well, I have to kind of block my time, and then time management really become more and more important when I'm getting more and more focused into getting projects done. I have the luxury to run a business that doesn't require a lot of like physical time. Like, I have a translation company that's basically on autopilot, semi-autopilot.
Oh, nice.
So one, I probably work on it every day, 1 hour top. Or sometimes even 15 minutes or an hour every day.
Don't tell people that. They're going to find out and then be like, hey, we're paying her how much? She's only working an hour a day.
No. Listen, I deserve, that's why I like capitalism. I deserve every single dime because I set up the system.
I believe it.
And I have to suck it up for the first year.
That's right.
Working 12 hours a day. And that's, you know, it doesn't.
You front load your effort if you're there, so.
Yeah, anyways, I deserve every dime I earned.
I agree. I think you do too.
So I have a business that take care of the financial side of things, which I'm super blessed and lucky. And I'm, you know, I was joking when I said I deserve every dime. There's a lot of luck to it. I think I'm lucky. I think I'm extremely lucky. I think most creators do not have the same luxury of like financial, you know, cushion. I had to break it to most people. Whether you're a stand-up comedian or you're a comic book artist, to do this like long term, you either have to be extremely tenacious and resilient and able to endure a lot of discomfort and no financial return nor, you know, rewards, or, you know, your parents are rich or you have some kind of cushion. Otherwise, it's easy to quit because it's hard. It's really hard.
Well,
it's extremely hard.
Yeah. I mean, again, being in the same similar boat as doing comedy, and then I, you know, working on a comic book. I published a book years ago. I've done a lot of projects like that. But it was all stuff that, it's like, with comedy, you know, you do it for. I'm lucky enough to do it full time now, but there was a long time where I didn't, you know, and it was a lot of. You know, driving 4 hours to get 5 minutes and a hot dog, you know, and like that's what you know, it's like, and you know, any new comedian, I tell them all the time, I'm like, do you have any advice? I go, hit an open mic every night for the next 3 years, and if you haven't killed yourself, come back and talk to me.
We will, because that's why I like when people quit, like, I get it. I don't ever shame them. It's like, don't give up. Like, it's extremely, extremely hard. And it's kind of like, just think about it. It's kind of like moving to LA. You try to be a movie star.
Yeah.
You know, you think the thing that way is like, there are a lot of work, hard work, talent, and there's also a lot of luck. Sometimes you're just not lucky. You just, you know, you just don't have that luck in you.
I think there is some luck, but I think. And I think you're being humble. I think a lot of people who are really tenacious, like it sounds like you are, and really go after, like, figure out their project and understand you have to front load your time and effort, and it's going to pay off in the end. You know, you work 12-hour shifts at your business forever to be able to work.
Can you give me one moment?
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
My Roomba started.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm just stopping it. All right, sorry. Talk about AI. My robot just started on time.
It's listening to our whole conversation or sending it to the NSA.
Yeah, sorry, I interrupted. You were talking about, like, you know, 12-hour day.
Well,
a lot of,
I mean, there is some luck involved, but also, like, I think people lean on that a little too much. They're like, I just need to get lucky. And it's like, no, you're probably going to have to work your ass off for little to no money for a long time, and then eventually hopefully it'll pay off, and it might not, and like that's really the only way to do it, you know. I mean, Yeah, when I wrote my book, I still had a day job. I was doing comedy. I had a day job, and I was literally writing from like 7 o'clock at night till 3 in the morning, sleeping a couple hours, working. Da, da, da. Like, I mean, you know, in with comedy, you know, you'll.
You know? I think comedy, stand-up comedy, is a minimum 10-year commitment.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Before you see anything that's kind of like, before you see any real financial return, or you just see that you don't have it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of people put in 10 years, and only to learn that this is not for them.
Right.
You know, that's the, absolutely the God honest truth.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen that happen, but 10 years minimum. And I know right now there are a lot of social media stars that can fast track it through, but they still need to work on their social media. It's mm-hmm. not like a lot of people shit on those like influencers, you know, who have a lot of followers who don't know really how to do comedy, or they're 1 year in, they can do theaters. People like that exist.
Oh yeah.
But they have luck. They also have put in a lot of work, because this yeah. social media thing is really hard. That's another, they work on that.
Oh yeah.
They didn't work on the open mics yet, which they will. They work on something else.
Yeah.
So, but overall, according to my own observation, it's like 10 years. And then how are you going to spend those 10 years? Like, what if you just realize that's not your thing? Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like athletes when you think about it. Only 2% of like college basketball players made it to the NBA. What happened to the 98%?
Right.
They got a scholarship. They're going to some university. They're not spending time on economy one. They're playing basketball, right? Yeah. And then they didn't get drafted. Now what? Do you have, like, what are you going to do? Except for coaching basketball? Like, they only right. need this many coaches.
Yeah, there's only so many coaches. And then now you're, you know, you spent the last 10 years doing nothing but basketball. You have no discernible skill or passion. And so many of those people end up so depressed too, because they've just been so focused on one thing, and then that doesn't work out, and then they don't know how to move on.
Yeah, it's extremely hard these days, especially after COVID. You know, it's hard to make a living. Everything's crazy expensive. I don't know how people afford, you know, just those daily staples and stuff like that. So yeah, a lot of my friends are like living in their cars, or, you know, doing DoorDashes.
Yeah.
Like being waitresses, being waiters for like 10 years and just do this. And I assume it's very similar for comic books too. Like, for example, like I know that like even right now I passed my goal. Like I'm still in the red, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because it costs money to hire like good artists and everything like that.
Yeah.
I'll be extremely happy if I can break even.
Right.
And the break-even part does not really account for the time and effort I put in. I'm like not paying myself anything. When I say break-even, I mean all the money that I put out of my own pocket.
Yeah, yeah. It just comes back. That's right. And that's but also, again, that's where I said I think you're being humble when you said you've been really lucky with stuff. You're also willing to take that leap. And I think most people don't even take that chance on themselves to put the money in and front load the time and sacrifice to try to get where they want to be and do something they want to do, you know? So I think that's commendable. Yeah. Cause most people never even take that opportunity to see what they can do with, you know, chasing their dreams. So.
Yeah. So I would say it's kind of like contradictive, but have a plan B. It's scary to just have your back against the wall. You know, I personally don't really enjoy that kind of feeling. I don't think anyone does. If you have rich parents, congratulations.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing to be ashamed of. Whatever. We're all jealous of you. You know? Like, utilize it. I wish I have rich parents.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I never shame them. It's like, I'm jealous.
Yeah.
You know?
If I could, I would. I would use it.
You know, if I have it too, I wouldn't use their resource. Of course I would. I would siphon them like a baby on like a teat. You know what I mean? I would suck that teeth so hard, you know. So
it's gonna be
nothing left.
It's gonna be the drop
be
from the
bleeding
show
afterwards. You know,
yeah. Get that drop.
But like, if you don't have that, have a plan B.
Yeah.
Like, kind of ask yourself, like, what am I gonna do? Worst case scenario. And if you're okay with that outcome, then do it.
Yeah.
But you have to be okay with the possibility that it doesn't work.
Right, right.
Because you have to be kind of... Because I'm a very pragmatic person, which is weird. I'm idealistic and pragmatic at the same time. like deep inside, I understand the chance is low. You know, you can make it, you can get closer and closer and closer, but there is no guarantee.
Right.
And you have to be able to live with the possibility that I tried everything. I've given 10 years of my life. I've worked my ass off, and then it's not what I wanted, or I didn't achieve it. Where I was told, or I realized it's really not my thing, or I have no business doing this anymore.
Yeah.
You just have to accept that it's a possibility. I'm not trying to like be so gloomy.
Well, no, it's what do they say?
It's liberating when you learn that. It's liberating when you,
Well, I mean, it's hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
Exactly.
You know, and that's, you know, people call that pessimistic, and I'm like, because I'm like you too. I like to be hopeful, but I'm also very pragmatic. So I'm like, I can prepare and hope and want this, but I also have to live in the reality I currently live in. And that, you know, and so you have to live in that situation while trying to get to the next situation, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No.
We've talked about a lot today.
We have. We've covered a lot of ground. Zio, I know you got to get out of here soon, but let's tell people where they can find you, follow you on social media, how they can help with the Kickstarter campaign, and where, give them all the details.
Cool. So Monkey Volume 1 is currently on Kickstarter. So if you go to Kickstarter Comics, search Monkey, you will see my campaign. Currently, we have reached our funding goal, but again, I'm in the red. So please keep contributing and backing the project. The comic book has been completely finished. So you're going to receive something and we will deliver. So we have 21 days left. So if you can go to Kickstarter, back our campaign, we appreciate it. We have social media presence on Instagram. If you go to Instagram and follow Monkey Comic, that's one word, Monkey Comic. And through that bio, you can follow me, you know, every information is tagged there. And we'll share updates and, you know, screenshots and stuff like that. And yeah, I hope you back us and enjoy our work.
Absolutely. All right. Guys, well, go check it out. Like we said, go ahead and you can still kick in some funds, get a book. There's still time to help support the project. And that way the next volume can come even faster. You can keep reading. Any comedy shows coming up?
Yes. I don't know how many LA listeners you have. I have some. I have a show July 7th at the Hollywood Improv and July 14th at the Comedy Store.
Nice.
So if you want to catch my comedy shows, those are the 2 days, the 7th and the 14th of July.
Yeah. Perfect. All right, guys. Well, that is it. Like I said, make sure and follow her. Check out everything she's got going on, from comedy to comic books, graphic novels, everything, and more. And again, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Some announcements with some projects I'm working on soon. And live dates, again, just around close to San Antonio for the next few weeks. And then check the calendar for road dates coming soon. So, all right, guys, for the Social Hour, I have been Deese, and for Zio, thank you very much, everyone, and we will see you all next week.